Genesis House, FirstNet, built with AT&T, and the Friends in Recovery podcast are proud to bring you Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast. Join your hosts,
Podfather, Jersey Ed,
and Noontime with Skylar New,
as they address the real issues of first responders' health and wellness, from physical and mental health to relationships and work-life balance. Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast, is available on Facebook, Podbean, iTunes, and YouTube, as well as iHeartRadio, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, here are your friends in recovery answering the call.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Answering the Call, the First Responders podcast, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. I am Mike Miles. I am the Podfather, and I'm soloing today without Jersey Ed or without Skylar. They're both off doing things, very busy down there in New Jersey. But I have a very impressive guest on today. I have Dr. Feldman, Barry Feldman. I read his bio, and I'll tell you, I said, what have you been doing with your life, Mike Miles? Jesus, I feel like a slug. How are you, doctor?
Great. Thanks, Mike.
Great to be here. Really nice having you on. If you wouldn't mind, you know, this is a great show. Answering the Call, we try to touch as many people in law enforcement, corrections, EMS, and veterans, as we were just talking about prior to the show. Mm-hmm. I went over your bio, and I won't do it justice. So just tell us a little bit about yourself and take your time.
Well, I don't like talking about myself in that respect, but I'll do a little bit of that here. Well, let's see. A lot of my work is I got my PhD in clinical social work, master's and PhD from wonderful Boston College.
Yes,
Chestnut Hill, Mass. I gave them a lot of my money, is what that means. I get the focus of my work over the years has been really suicide prevention. Mm-hmm. I got involved in, so I've working with police, fire, EMS, military personnel over the years. I was a suicide prevention consultant to the Massachusetts National Guard. Interestingly, you know, I got involved in suicide prevention work when I was started teaching up at the University of New Hampshire, and they wanted somebody to do some work research on suicide prevention. And I was interested. I said, sure, let me do that. I needed to get some funding and I needed a project. And these people, you know, came along with a project related to suicide prevention. In the course of doing my research, I became aware of the high rates of suicide among law enforcement, police officers in particular, but, you know, fire, EMS, military, we know about the high rates of suicide among our veterans now, but that kind of jump started my career. I became interested in that respect. I'm a first responder in my own world. I'm a ski patroller. And, you know, mostly fun work, but as we say, sometimes work gets in the way.
Sure.
And so I at least had a little bit of that. But I'll just kind of end this piece a couple of things. I worked for a while at On-Site Academy up in Massachusetts, yeah. Residential Treatment and Training Center for
Dr. Hayden Duggan.
First responders Hayden and Valerie Duggan.
Yep.
Folks, I'm sure know them.
Wonderful.
And it was great work. I learned a lot from them. And I spent 5 years as the lead clinician at the Boston Police Stress Unit. And also worked with Boston EMS and, you know, in that world. So, you know, that the suicide prevention piece is really carry, you know, that's what I guess my specialization is. And that's probably enough about myself.
But you know, guys like you kill me because you're so humble. But I know Dr. Duggan, Hayden Duggan, behind me, you can't see it, but on my wall, there's a newspaper, a front page article written back in 97. He's in the article, and him and his wife, and, you know, the on-site has helped so many people. But, you know, humble guys like yourself, you know, perfect for the job, perfect for what you do, because as you know, cops are a hard lot. It's a different job, and they just won't talk to anybody. You know what I mean? I can see me telling you everything. I'll tell you where the bones are buried all day long, and I just met you. So, yeah. But, it's just interesting stuff. But I think it's so important. I've had several police officers in Lowell, two of them very close friends. One of them actually lived with me back in the 80s when I was single, and Chris Finnegan, he took his own life. Bobby Martin, Lowell police officer, took his own life. Yeah. I've had a few friends anyway. And, you know, if you're in this career long enough, you're going to come across that. And
one of the things I forgot to mention, you prompted me a little bit here, is I did some research, actually published a paper on the impact of responding to suicide calls on police officers. Besides the suicides in the ranks, which, you know, very tragic, of course, responding to the calls can be very, very challenging and devastating kind of situations. And really stay, really stay with the officers, especially when it's kids and all, but just those suicide calls are really kind of troubling, you know, in a lot of ways.
Doctor, do you feel they trigger? So I know cops, you know, that I've been to suicides at the prison as well. I worked as a correctional officer. I saw a couple suicides, but since I retired, I've worked with the Middlesex Sheriff's Department as their EAP for 3 years. Mm-hmm. In the city of Lowell, I was the EAP for 11 years, eight years, the end of my career, and then 3 years per diem when I retired. Do you believe, is it your belief or your understanding that, you know, we have a high risk of suicides in the profession. Do you think going to a suicide for a cop that's got his own issues and concerns is a trigger?
It could
be a trigger.
It certainly can be, Mike. And I've talked with many officers. You know, I did a lot of critical incident debriefing work, and you know, a lot of those debriefings were, you know, related to, frankly, responding to suicide calls. There are elements at the calls that were kind of, you know, I remember an officer in a small town, small department in Massachusetts. And I remember him telling me, you know, he had to be on the scene. The person hung themselves in the woods, kind of an isolated spot. He had to stay on scene, you know, protecting the scene until, you know, a medical examiner arrived and so on.
Sure.
And he was telling me, you know, he's out there almost 2 hours.
Right.
And he said, you know, during that time, it was really eerie. He said, you know, it almost seemed like the body was moving, or, you know, he just felt a little freaked out by that. And he said, you know, and I'm watching this, looking at this person and trying to, you know, distract myself. But he said, I couldn't help thinking, what got him to that point? And could I get to that point someday? Right. You know, that was pretty powerful for me, and that you know, so not necessarily a trigger, but a key point about that is officers, used to being in control. You know, they're trained to be in control. You know, operationally, their lives depend on it, and so does, you know, the safety of the public. But, you know, so if an officer is struggling, you know, emotionally, you know, they're dealing with some tough stuff, they're just not feeling good about things, that's a tough place for them to be. And, you know, feeling that you're out of control emotionally. So, you know, sadly, and the duty weapons are used, you know, more often than not. And, you know, that can represent essentially, you know, well, you know, shit, if I'm not, I can't say that on the radio, can I?
No, sure you can. Ed swears all the time. I got to get him to calm down. He drops the big ones.
So, you know, Anderson, same thing, you know, with military personnel, law enforcement, you know, this out of control feeling.
Right.
And sadly, you know, in some people's minds, when they get to that point of absolute despair,
right.
You know, they feel, can potentially feel that, well, they can really sort of take control by ending their life.
Right.
So, I mean, that's just a couple of, you know,
Sad outcome. Sad. James DiPaolo, the high sheriff of Middlesex County, took his own life.
I remember that.
I think about 9-10 years ago, and I knew Jim as a fun loving. He was a cop before he was the sheriff. He became an instant politician, but he ran a good show. But I guess he thought whatever he had been doing, wasn't going to work out, and he took his own life. From a guy that was almost ready to run for Congress.
Yeah.
And a month later, he's dead. I mean, you know, it was just a shock to so many people because he was such a vibrant, strong force. You know, did you ever meet Jimmy DiPaolo at all?
I did not meet Jimmy, after he died, myself and a colleague of mine, Al Grudzinskas, was an attorney that I forgot to mention. A lot of my work was out of University of Massachusetts Medical School.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
When I was in the Department of Psychiatry. So Al and I, we did a series of trainings for the Middlesex Sheriff's Department. Right. And, one of the issues, and it was not long after Jimmy's death. So, here we are talking about suicide prevention. And this wasn't for inmates.
Right.
This was more for the officers. Because,
correct.
You know, we know, again, elevated rates,
correct.
Elevated risk. So, I didn't really know all the details going into this training, and we did this probably two consecutive days, or, you know, it was a big group of people. I think we split it up. Anyway, after a while, during one of the breaks, somebody reminded me about that.
Right.
And, you know, that was sort of, I guess you call it the elephant in the room.
Right.
You know, so it took a few minutes to just acknowledge, you know, the sad, you know, his death and how tragic, it was. And he really had a powerful impact on the staff, everybody up there.
Sure.
So that was my, just my knowledge of Jimmy. And then I guess Peter Katusian took over from
yes, there. He did. Peter does a great job. I worked for Peter for 3 years, my partner, Jane, and I, and he's made some great changes out there. There's a guy that came in, I don't know what his law enforcement expertise was. I don't think he had much, but he does know people, and he put together some good programs out there, for the veterans, special unit for veterans. He's really, really worked on the addiction, in which we know. I mean, most people that I've ever arrested, for their behaviors, 90% of them are booze drug related, you know. And Peter's really done some good work out there. I got to say, I really do. He didn't renew my contract, but maybe there was a reason. I don't know.
Well, those things I mentioned about there's a lot of like risk factors, things that can elevate risk for first responders in general. And, and sadly, as I'm sure as there's like a progression, kind of a downward spiral.
Right.
That often occurs. And I remember with one of the officers at Boston PD kind of put together this sort of list of, like the downward spiral, identifying the different steps. And certainly included there, when I mentioned about feeling out of control emotionally, well, oftentimes alcohol, drugs, that'll they'll become coping mechanisms to manage your symptoms and to try to cope. But then that kind of stuff starts to affect job performance. People start banging in sick. They get a lot of complaints. It just starts to get visible.
Snowballs. Sure.
And it snowballs and they become more visible to, the commanding officers and all that stuff. And unfortunately, the funnel kind of narrows down to what we're talking about at the end. They feel like that taking their life is the only
way out
in their mind.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, you're speaking my language. I've been recovering for quite a while, over three decades. I started when I was young, 32. I've been a cop for about 6 years, but I had problems, alcohol and drugs. But the help I got right before I got it, that's exactly what happened. I mean, my appearance was always great. You know, I always looked neat and clean and shiny. And, you know, I loved the job, but the internal problems, my personal problems, you know what? You know, choir practice turned into isolating.
Yeah.
You know, by at home by myself, not addressing the problem. Luckily, I met Dr. John Barry and his wife Peg, out in Stoneham. And are you a Massachusetts guy or a New England guy?
Yeah, born and raised in Worcester.
I can tell Worcester. I can tell. Now you got a nice baseball team out there. You can go enjoy.
Well, I moved away.
Oh, did you? Yeah, yeah.
That's another story.
All right, but and I like what you said about the ski. And I haven't skied in years, but when I was a kid, I would skip school to go skiing up at Loon Mountain, ski 93. I think every mountain up there. And my wife too. We were dating. We'd go skiing.
Yeah,
she's a graduate of UNH. You know, Plymouth State. I'm sorry, Plymouth State. But she got her master's at UNH. But I'm talking to you. I feel like I know you. You're just one of these New England guys, these Boston guys that you just get close to. Boston PD, Brian Fleming. I'm sure you had done some work with Brian.
Brian, very briefly. Brian took over. You know, I love the work I was doing at on site, and I had three kids and things, and you know, it was just funding was always a challenge, you know, frustrating, you know, doing great work and hard to get the money to keep doing it.
Sure.
So I had to move on to, you know, more of a regular, you know, situation. So Brian took over at the stress unit right after Herbie White. Herbie White was the guy who was basically there, you know, throughout my time there.
Sure.
So Brian, I knew him from the CISM team. But didn't really work much with him at the stress unit, although I worked a lot with the staff. The staff still remained the same there. Brian is a good guy, you know, my recollection, really good guy.
Yeah, sure. And as we know, that's a tough job. I go back to the 80s, 86. My first badge meeting was in Mattapan with Eddie Donovan and a few other guys, just a bunch of cranky, disgruntled old cops, you know. And
yeah.
You know, I'm a 32 year old, you know, I felt like an old guy, but I went in there and you know, they were very suspicious. Who's this guy? You know, right away, I knew I was in a room full of cops, you know.
Yeah.
But Dr. Barry was very helpful. And, you know, over the years, and the guy that you spoke about, Dr. Hayden Duggan, I mean, I just think of the countless people he's helped, you know.
Yeah.
Do you feel, I mean, you've been doing this a while. I read your bio, honestly, like I said, you know, I read it and I'm like, I feel like a slug, you know. I feel like I should be on this money. But do you feel that we're in a place nowadays in society? I know right now law enforcement is taking a beating and for whatever reasons, you know, good or bad, you know, I don't like to look at the political side of it, but I really don't believe there's anyone out there shooting people because of the color of their skin. I mean, training's training. We make mistakes. Sure. Your cell phones are available. Back in the day, back in my career, if they had cell phones, a lot of us wouldn't be working, you know, or we would have been answering for things that, you know, was common nature. We had clubs. They gave us clubs when we come on. They gave you a little wooden club.
Yeah.
And you know, no one ever said don't hit on the head. They just gave you a club, you know.
Right.
Until you got sued a couple times, you realize don't hit him on the head, you know. But do you think we're in a place now, meaning where law enforcement is getting, law enforcement has it available to them to get the help they need for stress, anxiety, addiction?
Well, I guess yes and no. You know, I've been kind of trying to bang that drum for a lot of years, you know, about the importance of, you know, treatment and access to treatment.
Right.
You know, I like to think that some of the dinosaurs, so to speak, have moved on, you know, right. in the command staff, and there's just more awareness. I do fitness for duty work, fitness for duty evaluations, with some wonderful people
at
Chandler Psychological Services in Worcester,
right.
who,
right.
So I guess the key is, first of all, I think you need clinicians who can understand the culture.
Right.
Because as you said, it's not easy to get accepted or to
right.
get, frankly,
right.
to be trusted. I think the big word is trust.
Trust, right.
And there are, I think there are more opportunities, for officers to get help.
Right.
Unfortunately, a lot of the help comes like late. Better late than never.
Such a good point. Such a good point.
And myself and some colleagues, we talked about even sort of a mandatory, like maybe annual or every other year or whatever, just kind of a check-in,
mm-hmm.
From the mental health side.
Sure.
Again, one of the wonderful metaphors from on-site is, the rocks in the backpack.
Right.
Officers have to, they got to dump out those rocks in the backpack, the critical incidents.
Yeah.
Having help to do that is really important. I'd like to think some progress has been made. I think, a long way to go with all that. But frankly, there's a stigma in our society in general about accessing mental health services.
Sure.
So, and that, it's still, I think, a big concern in the police culture.
Doctor, I'm going to take a quick break here. We're going to come right back to mental health services. I am the Podfather, answering the call, the First Responders Podcast, brought to you by FirstNet, sponsored by AT&T. We'll be right back.
You're first. First to respond. First to put others' lives before your own. And in an emergency, you need a network that puts you first. That connects you to technology, to each other, and to other agencies. Built with and for first responders. FirstNet, the only congressionally authorized wireless network for first responders. Because putting you first is our job.
Since 1992, Genesis House has been helping real people heal from addiction on their private recovery campus in beautiful Palm Beach County, Florida. Their family-owned program is accredited by the Joint Commission and offers detox and dual diagnosis treatment in a comfortable and confidential setting. At Genesis House, they focus on treating the underlying causes of addiction. Their comprehensive approach includes psychiatric care, individual and small group therapy, trauma healing techniques, and holistic care including yoga, massage, and animal-assisted therapy. After treatment, their clients enjoy the lifelong support of a nationwide network of Genesis House alumni. Call Genesis House today at 1-800-737-0933 to speak with someone who understands. Visit them on the web at www.genesishouse.net. It's time to start your journey to a long and successful recovery.
Hey, everybody, welcome. Answering the Call, the First Responders Podcast, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. I am the Podfather, and I'm happy to say I'm here with Dr. Barry Feldman. Jersey Ed and Skylar are off today. They're not here. They left us all to myself. And boy, I was surprised. I never thought anyone would let me do my own show, but I'm going to muddle through this. Luckily, I have a good guest, Dr. Feldman. Doctor, before we went, took the break, you were talking about, how it is improved. We got a long way to go as far as, police and people in this type of work, getting the help they need. It's recognized. I like this when you said fitness for duty. I think years ago, it seems to me years ago that it was decided amongst the higher ups in the police department in general. So now there's a place. I don't know how long Dr. Mendonca and this whole group you're with, how long have they been in place down there? Do you know?
Oh, boy. I know Dr. John Madonna. And now his son has some is involved. I don't know. I've been working right. with them, like real sort of as requested, additional stuff to my own work up at UMass medical school. So long time. I mean, over 20 years.
I'm right, sure. 20 years. Yeah,
I'm sure. John is a really good guy, and they do, you know, really good work and good crew of people. Sure. And but to your point, you know, the evaluations are, you know, our goal is to, you know, to be helpful to, you know, to try to do what's best for the officer.
Right.
You know, as much as we can, you know, whether it's to stay on duty or maybe to retire, you know, you can't force people to do that necessarily. But, you know, we it's not an adversarial situation.
No, it's not at all. And I think a lot of people going down there are very anxious. I've had a couple of, you know, local police mm-hmm. officers that yeah. were going there that said, hey, what am I going to expect? And I said, listen, mm-hmm. you're going to be very surprised at how understanding. And I mean, these people know your job. They know, you know, it's Mr. Potato Head, you're just a different head. They know what you're going through and they're going to work with you. You know, it's not like a bunch of social workers that hate, you know, any authority. They don't like cops, you know.
Yeah.
So, and they all come back saying the same thing. You were right. It was good, you know, because 90% of the time they come back with good results. They're just getting the help they need.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Good people yep. doing good work, I think.
Yeah. I think, you know, when I think of veterans, I know you've done work with veterans too. And I think of, you know, what they have to go through. And again, too, with both these professions, well, all the professions, law enforcement, EMS, and veterans, the families are involved too. And, you know, it takes a toll on the family, this type of work,
yeah.
you know, yeah. you know, somebody like, you know, the guy who sees the cop who's going to stay with the body, which is protocol, you know, especially at a suicide till the medical examiner gets there. I mean, it might not sound like it's tough, but some people that are so anti-police, I like to see them just go through something like that. That's a very tough thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And then you go home and you got your wife and children and, you know, you got to be a dad or a mom, you know, in some cases.
Hard to flip the switch.
Certainly. I'm sure you've worked with family members.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah. A lot of work with veterans, over the years. And as I mentioned, you know, the National Guard suicide prevention consultant to them. But you know, that very kind of different, you know, sort of more, I don't want to say as an outsider, but you know, I'm not a veteran. My father, who's alive and doing pretty well at 97, World War II veteran, Army Air Corps, a lieutenant. He was a bombardier.
Wow.
And so, you know, he never talked about his stuff too much, never really got involved. The only time we got involved as kids was growing up. They had a show on TV years ago called 12 O'Clock High.
Sure, watch it.
You know, the older folks remember that, and my brother and I used to take turns putting on his flight jacket, you know, like each week while we were little, you know, young kids watching
sure.
the show.
That's awesome.
And then, you know, I guess it certainly hit home with us in a, you know, hit home for me and my family in a very tragic way. My daughter fell in love, about 2008, 2009. She met a wonderful guy who was living in Boston, who was a Special Forces, Green Beret, Army, you know, soldier who was recovering from his wounds up in Massachusetts, where he lived. And so, you know, they met, fell in love, and I guess the plan, sort of his thinking was, you know, he was close to being medically discharged, but, you know, because of all the training these guys get, I guess they figured, you know, at 80% or 85%, you know, he's a good man. He didn't get his medical discharge. But he, you know, like the true soldier, he wanted to stay in. They loved the job. He loved the work.
Of course.
While he was up there recovering from his wounds, he was a co-founder of an organization called Massachusetts Fallen Heroes. His name is Sergeant Eric Emond. So they moved down to, they had a daughter up there, and then they moved down to North Carolina. He's stationed at Fort Bragg. So I guess, you know, to kind of get to the end of the story, because it's still tough for me to talk about it.
I bet.
He was killed in Afghanistan on November 27, 2018. So my daughter, 32 at the time, her kids, three little girls, eight, six, and three. And I moved down to, I live in South Carolina now, wanted to be closer to them before that happened, you know, and then that happened and it just, you know, gave it a whole new meaning being closer to her. So, you know, she hates it when I talk about, she doesn't like me to talk about this stuff. So I won't get into a lot of the
right
details, but from the family side, I think, you know, I just want to say, you know, awful, 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 as you know, and I mentioned Mass Fallen Heroes because the organization that Eric was, you know, helped to establish, that organization was very instrumental in helping my daughter and our family, you know, frankly, over the first year. You can imagine all the crazy stuff going on, and you know, the stress and the challenges and all that. So I want to give a shout out to you know, to that organization, certainly, you know, for the work that they did to help my family. So you know, that's the side of it that people don't really realize, the families involved, the impact on the families of the service, you know, our servicemen and women, who, you know, the general public, I think in many instances, really, you know, don't even know what's going on over there. You know, I hear people say like, well, they're still fighting really in Afghanistan.
Right.
Well, that's what, you know, hey, well, that's what they sign up for.
Yeah.
You know, you get killed and that's what you sign up for. Same thing with cops. You know, you get the line of duty deaths and the general public has a different perspective. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's a little bit of the personal side in the military world for me.
Well, you know, it's very touching. Mass Fallen Heroes. I wrote it down. Believe me, we're gonna figure something out and send a donation. And Eric, was he a sergeant, a lieutenant?
Yeah, Sergeant First Class.
Sergeant First Class, Eric
Emond. Emond. Yeah. And by the way, that organization also assists families, you know, police families and fire, and it's not solely
right,
you know, focused on military.
Right. So. You know, it's, you have your own burdens. When I hear the three little girls and I just think of, you know, five of my friends were killed in a plane crash, five Lowell police officers coming back from a hunting trip. Mm-hmm. And it happened like that. And two of them were my closest, you know, very close friends. One of them was the Academy. Even prior, we were friends, Stephen Smith. He was a lieutenant. He was a Marine. He was a lawyer. He was a state trooper for one day. He went to the academy, got out and said, I'm really don't want this job. I just wanted to see if I could do it. He graduated tops in his class. And I'm sure Eric Emond, these type of people that are just a blink, like a bright star that goes out so quickly, you know, it's just heartbreaking because these are the people that should be running this world. You know, we should be listening to them and they go so quick and well, you got a legacy, but, thank God, you know, your children and grandchildren and your family have someone like yourself. You're an amazing person. You really are. No, you seriously are. I know you don't want to hear it, but too bad.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
You're gonna
thank
hear
you.
It.
And I don't want to hear it. No.
Yeah, I know you don't. Oh, I know you don't. Believe me, you're humble. I can tell. You know, right from the beginning, Doctor. But wow, this is something. We have a number I haven't given out. I've been kind of lapsed here. You're an interesting guest. This has been like a great. This has been a great podcast for me. This is one of the best. We have Copline 1-800-COPLINE. It's 100 police officers retired who. Mm-hmm. Are on the phones 24/7, 365.
Yep.
Stephanie Samuels, we had her on a few weeks ago on our podcast. Wonderful lady. She put this together. She's a clinician as well. Mm-hmm. She was wonderful. And 1-800-COPLINE is a number you can call, mm-hmm. not just about feeling suicidal or have suicide ideation. If you're depressed, anxious, you're in this line of work, you call them, you know, and you know, anybody out there wants to make a donation to an organization that helps not just veterans, but specifically veterans, but also other people in EMS and law enforcement. It's Mass Fallen Heroes. And I'm sure if you go on, you can Google that and you'll get all the pertinent information. Doctor, I got to tell you this. I had the worst day, which real quick, this is how my day went. I had a beautiful morning. I met my daughter and my granddaughter. We had breakfast. And then from there, it just all went downhill. I had $60 in my pocket. I pulled it out somewhere. Someone found it. I made someone's day. I lost $320 bills. Then I drove into I drove into a dumpster. I don't know what I was doing. Luckily, I was going slow, but I did a lot of damage to the front end of my car. And I said, Jesus, this day couldn't get any worse. But here
that
it is.
Reminds me of the story, Mike, where I was sitting in a coffee shop several years ago in Worcester. And a Worcester cop that I knew, you know, came in. And so we're just kind of talking, you know, hey, how's it going? I didn't really know him. You know, I knew him a little bit, hadn't really talked much. But we started talking, you know, of the coffee and stuff. And, you know, I said, how things going and all that. So he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out a dollar bill. He puts a dollar bill on the counter and he says, take the dollar. I said, I don't want to take your dollar. I'm not going to take your dollar. He says, take the dollar. He's just take the freaking dollar, you know? So I took the dollar. He says, all right, now I'm your client.
No, you got to listen, right?
And he said, you know, now, you know, what I'm going to tell you, can't repeat because now I'm a client. And I saw him again a couple of years later and we joked about that. And I said, by the way, the price has gone up to $2.
Yeah. Give me $2. Yeah. Hey, years ago when I first started getting well, you know, I had no money. I was out of work. They were going to fire me. 17 months anyway. I was doing odd jobs, but I really literally had very little resources. But a doctor, Xavier Michaels, Dr. Michaels, he's still alive. He's 94. He started seeing me and I told him, I said, Doc, I have no insurance. I have no money. He said, can you afford $5 a week? I said, of course. And I said, I feel like I'd be insulting you. And he said, well, Mike, I wouldn't even take the $5. But he said, if I saw you for nothing, it'd be just two guys talking. He goes, but if I charge you, he goes, you're getting professional help. Yeah. And for several months, you know what? And when he retired, he gave me some stuff from his office. That man saved my life. And, you know, it's people like that, that, you know, you just never, ever forget and you think of it. And, you know, I got a feeling anybody watching or listening to this podcast, Barry, they're never going to forget you. You are an incredible. No, you really. I know you're humble. You don't want to hear the bullshit, but I'm
turning red. You know,
I know you. I can see it. You're the best. Hey, we're gonna call this the end of this show, but end of this podcast. But would you come on again when Ed's feeling better?
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, you're a really good guy, and I think it's really important stuff that you're doing. And if I can contribute in any way, you know, I'm happy to do that. So the answer is yes, I would certainly want to do that. Absolutely.
Super. All right. Don't leave because I'm going to sign out from the show, but I just wanted to get your address afterwards. Thanks for coming on, Dr. Barry Feldman. Incredible show. This couldn't have gone any better if I tried. Thank you so much for all you do and just for everything you've provided today. Thank you.
Thanks to all the men and women out there who doing, you know, the tough work that they do or have done the tough work over the years if they're retired and have moved on. Thanks for what you do.
Well, nice closing. Thank you so much. Hey, everybody, answering the call, the First Responders Podcast, sponsored by FirstNet, built by AT&T. And the Podfather, Mike Miles. Stay safe, everyone.
That concludes this episode of Answering the Call, the First Responders Podcast. Thanks to Genesis House, FirstNet, built with AT&T, for supporting those on the path to recovery and keeping this valuable resource free for all our friends in recovery. Follow us on Facebook for past shows and updates, and enjoy free access to twice daily support meetings. Brought to you by Genesis House and the Friends in Recovery. If you can't get enough of Mike, the Podfather, Jersey Ed, and Skyler, you can catch them on Friends in Recovery, the Addiction Recovery Podcast. Available on Facebook, Podbean, iTunes, YouTube, iHeartRadio, and GenesisHouse.net.